Welcome back to a Metro News special report, Human Rights in China, A Closer Look. Here's Eric Olander.
It is unclear if China really has a firm human rights policy. Some sinologists argue Beijing's position on the issue fluctuates in reaction to changes in the political and economic climate. Analysts maintain the human rights environment was dramatically improved in the early 80s during the period of liberalization. However, as Orville Schell said, since Tiananmen Square, there has been a significant contraction on people's ability to express themselves and on rights in general. Chinese authorities in Hong Kong and Beijing declined to comment to Metro News on the government's human rights policy, saying we should refer to previous statements made by Premier Li, Foreign Ministry spokesman Wu Jianmin, and other senior officials. The Chinese Foreign Ministry has said Beijing is willing to discuss human rights with other governments, but not the media. To better understand the official Chinese governmental position on human rights, I spoke with the chief editor of the Hong Kong-based pro-Beijing Da Gongbao newspaper, Zhang Taxing.
From what I gather, the Chinese official position is that human rights not only includes political rights, but should also include the right of survival, the right of development, cultural rights, education rights, all in all that broad aspect. Also from the Chinese angle, human rights does not only concentrate specifically on the individual. There is also the concept of collective rights, because if a country or a nation under aggression, then there's very little that an individual human rights there's very little that you can talk about individual human rights. I mean, if the whole nation is under oppression or under aggression. So this is in the Chinese concept, this includes the broadest aspects, right?
Do you think the whole nation, China, is under oppression and aggression?
Of course, China is now an independent country. And I think in recent months, China has been more open and more willing to discuss human rights issues with other countries. I think the problem now is, the people are still very much under this Cold War mentality. They still tend to look upon things as a difference between ideology, difference between two systems, the capitalist system and the socialist system. For people who have this Cold War mentality, who believes that socialism, by definition, is an infringement of human rights, then I think it's a dead end to start the negotiations. If the people are taking this kind of stand and regard socialism as an immediate infringement on human rights, then I don't think there's any there's much for China to discuss about. If the people really would want China to end the socialist system, which I think the Chinese people and the Chinese, of course, the Chinese government now is adhering to the principle of adhering to socialist principles. But if people get rid of this Cold War mentality and holds that even under socialism or under capitalism, there's improvement in the livelihood of the people, but also there are shortcomings in various fields. I mean, in various countries, I suppose, not only in China, have much room for improvement in the human rights, in the area of human rights. I think there's lots of areas that one can discuss with China.
So it may be more of a political barrier than a cultural barrier between the West or the industrialized world and China in terms of understanding and doing something about human rights.
I won't entirely rule out cultural issues, of course. I would be very blunt and provocative if you think it is not right, then you may advise me to leave that out. But of course, for for Western people to look upon the Chinese as having having a disregard of human rights, I think is, of course, a very biased, a very prejudiced thing to say. In fact, China has a much longer civilization than the West. I mean, when the Chinese started having a sort of civilization, the West is still living in caves. I mean, when the Chinese developed this Confucian system of humanism, I think the West may still be abusing the women and the children. There is this cultural thing. I won't rule that out because I think there's still a very strong cultural Confucian tradition, even after all these years, after all the turmoils of the Cultural Revolution, there's still a very strong Confucian element in the Chinese society as well as in other Eastern societies, and which stressed the collective good in contrast to maybe Western concepts of individual liberty. I won't rule out individual liberty, but in the Oriental concept, there's a cultural aspect of it which stressed the common good. I mean, sacrificing the personal self for the common good. There is this element, which could be a handicap in exchanges. But I think nothing. I think that can be overcome through more exchanges and more dialogue. Understanding, right?
Do you think civil, political, and economic rights all fall under the umbrella of a human right, or is there a difference?
The Chinese government official position is taking that position. That means that if you talk about human rights, then you should also include cultural rights, and the rights to education, social rights, and because of the overall perception of the world and the general thrust of the foreign policy, they stress very much on the right to development. I mean, if one can make that clear, the concept is that the present economic situation in the world is lopsided in favor of the developed nations, and whereas the developing countries faces a lot of economic handicaps, we may not. I mean, the poor countries are getting poorer, and they're not getting any richer, and not catching up with the developed West. So, in order to talk about human rights, the Chinese government concept is that one should also look upon how we improve the livelihood of the people in the developing countries, and this is a very important aspect of human rights. This is what the position is.
The position of the government needs to feed its 1 billion plus population supersedes all human rights is the government line. Now, if that is the thinking, then how do you justify, or how does the Chinese government justify locking up political prisoners, Tiananmen Square, the crackdowns, the Cultural Revolution, the hundreds of thousands of deaths?
Okay, the Cultural Revolution is something they have reversed verdicts of the Cultural Revolution. In fact, the official government position is a total turnaround on the Cultural Revolution. They have totally repudiated the Cultural Revolution. Whereas, in fact, among the people, or among some of the individuals, some people may not entirely rule out the positive aspect. I mean, it is a terrible thing to say about talking about the positive aspects of the Cultural Revolution because so many people have suffered and died. But I think some among the people may argue that there is an ideal there, that there's something that they want to achieve. But I'll leave that aside. About Tiananmen Square and all this, of course, a very sensitive topic. It's a very political thing. A lot of arguments can still be made on both sides, but I think a general consensus has emerged. I mean, consensus is not meaning including everyone. A general consensus emerged, stressing that what China needs now is stability. Is paramount. I mean, in order for people to improve their livelihood and to develop the economy, we should have political stability. and the arrests and the detention, the trials, the imprisonment of some of the people involved in the Tiananmen Square were according to Chinese law, and they say that they have broken Chinese law and justified it, and they argue that through breaking Chinese law, they threaten the stability of the society. And these people, I think, if my memory is correct, all the people now under serving the prison terms have already gone through a trial, gone through the Chinese legal process. I mean, no matter how we or how other people look upon these trials, it's a proper trial under the Chinese law. I mean, some of them definitely have room for improvement, but there's a legal framework under which they're sentenced to imprisonment.
Chief editor of the Dakongbao newspaper, Zhang Taksing. From 1985 to the spring of 1989, Winston Lord was Washington's ambassador to Beijing. With his wife, Betty Bao Lord, many experts say they were unquestionably the strongest diplomatic pair the U.S. has ever had in Beijing. I spoke with Lord by phone from his home in the States and asked him his view of what a human right is in a Chinese context.
Well, first, I think we should recognize certain human rights which are universal and then distinguish those from particular cultural and historical contexts. Clearly, there are some that are universal. They're enshrined in the United Nations Charter, which all countries, including China, have signed. And therefore, you cannot deny that killing people, torturing people, holding people without fair trial is not an abuse of human rights in any country. So I think we should keep those in mind, which are clearly worldwide and which should be applied to every country, and which, in fact, every country who has signed the UN Charter has agreed to respect. There are other human rights that perhaps have more Western or Asian or other geographic or historical overtones, and one can distinguish those. But it is an excuse, and a weak one indeed, to say, well, we have our own particular traditions, and therefore we don't have to worry about some of these universal human rights.
Generally, how would you describe the human rights environment in China today?
Well, it's horrible. ever since the massacre around Tiananmen Square in June of 1989, there's been a continuing crackdown, executions, thousands of people detained without trial, any accounting, and then phony trials when there were trials, and many still haven't heard about whether they're in jail, whether they're dead, where they are. Continued ideological indoctrination, surveillance, persecution, xenophobia. Situation is very grim indeed now. But the basic situation is very grim, but it's somewhat relieved by the fact that, particularly as you get away from Beijing, many of these repressive edicts are not being fully honored.
Now, would you say the human rights climate today in China is different from any other time in the past?
Well, there's always times. For example, when I was stationed in China as American ambassador from 1985 to the spring of 1989, obviously, the situation was not perfect. There were many glaring abuses, including in Tibet and many political prisoners, etc. But the general trend was somewhat hopeful. It was a more open time, freer travel, freer tolerance of religion, freer emigration, a somewhat freer press, although still controlled. Dissidents maybe would be censored or perhaps lose their jobs, but they wouldn't be put in jail. Writers could might write something that was wrong. It wouldn't get published, but they wouldn't be put in jail. So you have to look at trend lines, not just snapshots. And the trend during the mid-80s in China was encouraging, although obviously not perfect. In previous periods of Chinese history, of course, there have been abuses, as there have been in almost every country in the world. But to say that the situation is grim in the past does not excuse making it grim today.
Now, let's take a look at Chinese history during the imperial era. How would you compare the human rights violations then to those under the communist regime?
Well, I mean, you have some similarities and some differences. In both the emperor's times as well as the communist times, you have a hierarchical situation where the rulers exercise firm control although the center often is warring with the provinces for absolute control, you have an emphasis on the collective and the community and the clan as opposed to the individual. It's the rule of people and not the rule of law. So there are some similarities in that respect. Certainly there were many horrible abuses during the many dynasties of Chinese history. I think one thing that has improved in recent decades versus most of China's history is the treatment of women. We no longer have bound feet and women are not totally subservient to father figures, etc., although women have not achieved full equality in China any more than they have in most other countries of the world.
Now, it was really the Tiananmen incident which woke the rest of the world up to the topic of human rights, and it's become a very fashionable issue now. But do you think the world is beginning to forget Tiananmen Square and human rights in China as a result of the events in the Soviet Union and the Middle East and so forth?
Well, there's two things to separate out. One is the at least the ephemeral concentration, understandably, on issues like the Iraq invasion of Kuwait or this summer's abortive coup and the aftermath in the Soviet Union. It's only natural that the media and world opinion would focus on that temporarily. But you could make the case, particularly with respect to what's happened in the Soviet Union, that attention will now come back on China's human rights situation. We've seen political and economic freedom advancing across the world. You've seen communist regimes toppling in Eastern Europe, even in Outer Mongolia and China's border, and now in the Soviet Union, the very heart and source of communism. And therefore, China is a very lonely place, or at least its government is. On the other hand, it is true that since June 1989, the passage of time, the big lie put out by the Chinese government, the desire of many other countries to trade with China, that all these elements, as well as other big world events, have dimmed the memory of what we saw so vividly on those television screens. And I'm afraid that much of the world has forgotten Tiananmen Square and overlooks the ongoing repression. Certainly we've seen just in recent weeks the ice broken on high-level visits in Beijing. The Japanese prime minister was there a few weeks ago and, as usual, tiptoed around on human rights. The British prime minister has just visited Beijing. He was certainly much stronger on human rights. But again, I question whether he would have gone to some other countries with equally repressive governments. So, yes, I think a lot of the sanctions have been dropped and a lot of attention has turned elsewhere. But I'm encouraged by what's happened in the Soviet Union, not only for the Soviet people, but that I think it will hearten the reformers in China. It's no doubt scared and deeply distressed the rulers in Beijing.
I'd like to talk about some quotes made by Premier Li Peng. Li Peng says, and I quote, "China attaches great importance to and respects human rights, and that guaranteeing the Chinese people's basic right is a major part of Chinese constitution." Can you describe what you think Li Peng means by this?
Well, that's total nonsense, of course. I mean, the Soviet leaders, communist leaders, all the way from Stalin onward, always used to cite their phony constitutions, as did the communist governments in Eastern Europe. So the pieces of paper mean absolutely nothing. It's the practice that counts. Now, one element he does refer to, and one has to take account of, is whether people are managing to eat and get clothing and so on. And there's no question that the reforms in the 1980s did improve the lives of many Chinese people, particularly in the countryside, but also in the cities. And that's a factor. There's still severe economic problems and inequalities and tremendous corruption, and they still have a basically centralized socialist system. But for many Chinese, they are living better than they were 40 years ago, and one can take hope in that. But that is not the only human right that people should enjoy, nor will they demand.
Now, continuing with Li Peng, he says, and I quote, "Different nations have different criteria and understanding of human rights and shouldn't become an excuse for interfering in the internal affairs of another country." What do you think of that?
Well, that's an excuse to tell everyone to mind their own business and let them get on with their political repression. And it's also he and other the hardline leaders like to draw on xenophobia and blame all their problems on outsiders. The fact is that China, as I've already suggested, signed the UN Charter, which obligates nations to respect basic human rights. and they have an obligation like other countries. It's a legitimate interest. Certainly, Western nations should not dictate how China should rule itself. It shouldn't say you have to have this or that system. But we can insist that in order to have business as usual, they cannot murder and torture and imprison and persecute their citizens.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you met with Chinese leader during your tour as ambassador, what sort of issues did you raise regarding human rights, and what was their reaction?
Well, first, as I say, the trend was somewhat more hopeful when I was there. I left just before the Tiananmen Square massacre. I raised Tibet. I went to Tibet personally, the first American ambassador to do so, and raised the question of prisoners and religious freedom and cultural freedom, etc. We also raised in Beijing itself the plight of prisoners and missing people. Many people would say that the United States during the 1980s did not stress human rights as strongly with China as they did, for example, with the Soviet Union. And I think that's a fair comment. I think, however, there was some justification for a somewhat more muted approach toward Beijing, at least until Gorbachev came to Moscow, for a couple of reasons. One, as I've suggested, the Chinese society, with glaring exceptions, was generally moving in the right direction, whereas the Soviet society before Gorbachev was at best the same or going backwards. Furthermore, in foreign policy, China was generally being helpful, and the Soviet Union was being adventurous and threatening and helping its proxies around the world and building up its military machine. So for all these reasons, we took a somewhat less emphatic approach on human rights with China in the 80s than we did with the Soviet Union. But almost every one of those premises has now been overturned. The Soviet Union is much more cooperative on the world scene, of course, and is moving toward a more democratic and open system. China has a mixed record on the world scene and is going backwards on human rights. So if there were a double standard in the 80s that one could perhaps justify, it is no longer justifiable.
Now, what do you think of President Bush's China policy as it relates to human rights?
Well, I think it's very poor. I think it's an absolute double standard in which he supports democracy and human rights in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe and Latin America and Africa, but he doesn't in China. Very tepid support to the people during the Tiananmen Square demonstrations while he preserved his personal ties with the Chinese leaders. And he consistently absolves the Chinese leaders. We saw, after some initial hesitation, some very strong statements supporting democracy and freedom in the Soviet Union this past August. We didn't see those kind of statements during the Tiananmen Square demonstrations. So I'm very disappointed, and I don't really fully understand and certainly do oppose this double standard.
Now,
we can conduct necessary business with Beijing and talk to them on various issues, but we ought to make clear where we stand, and we ought to bring our position on human rights in China in close conjunction with our position on a global basis.
Now, if you were president of the U.S., what would you do differently?
An unlikely possibility.
But what would you do differently than Bush?
Well, I would have a mixture in our policy of conducting in a workmanlike fashion necessary business with the government. It is an important country. It will be one. While at the same time making clear we stand with reformers and for a better situation on human rights. More specifically, we should talk to China about issues like selling missiles or Korean peace or Cambodian peace. These are important issues, but we can do it at the working level, or through ambassadors or assistant secretaries or in multilateral forums like the UN. We should not do it by receiving the Chinese foreign minister in the Oval Office after they abstained on the UN resolution on the Persian Gulf. We should not do it by sending the National Security Advisor secretly to Beijing twice in the wake of the slaughter around Tiananmen Square. So I would avoid high-level visits, but I would conduct business at the working level, and I would adjust our rhetoric so that we support human rights in China as we do everywhere else in the world and drop this double standard. Meanwhile, I'd let private, academic, cultural, economic, and scientific ties continue wherever possible because they're usually conducted with progressive forces in China that we wish to strengthen. So I would not oppose those. I would continue selective sanctions on military cooperation, technology transfer, and international economic loans. So I'm looking for a mix here. I don't think we should isolate China. I think that's a straw man that the administration accuses its critics of putting forward as a policy. No one who's serious wants to isolate such an important country. They're isolating themselves through their repression. But I do think we can do business with them without having a double standard, and we should above all align ourselves with the people of China and with the future leaders of China rather than with a few old friends who will be passing from the world scene within a few years.
How much?
During some very dark days. So we can have an influence. We can make sure we don't legitimize the regime through high-level visits, that we don't absolve the leaders of human rights abuses that we wouldn't absolve anywhere else. This can have some help. Also, with some more pressure, I think we can sometimes get some modest progress, and I stress modest, with this regime in Beijing, on certain individual cases or particularly egregious abuses. So we can both hearten those who are struggling for freedom and put some pressure on the government, although, frankly, there won't be any fundamental change as long as this group is in power.
There's a breeze blowing through my garden. That was a storm in Tiananmen Square. They tried to silence all the voices, but the screams stay in the air. And we
this Metro News special report, Human Rights in China, a closer look with Eric Olander, will return after this brief news break.